This past week, our reading was from the middle of the book of Luke to the middle of the book of John. And since it's all very familiar passages, I thought, well, this will give me a chance before Joe starts showing you all his pictures to show you a little bit about some of the places we went. And this is not really a travel log. I'm going to show you to begin with some of the areas around the northern part of the Sea of Galilee. A lot of the areas where Christ and the disciples traveled. And then we're going to, like I said, look at two different areas in the scripture of places that we went, that Christ and the disciples went, that are recorded in the scripture. And we'll see what the scriptures have to say about the places. And you can look at the places and come to your own little conclusion, which will be interesting, I hope. The picture that's up here is looking out over the Sea of Galilee. This is the sun coming up early in the morning. That's the picture we had every morning from our hotel room off the balcony. All of us, there were 25 of us on this trip. About 8 of them were preachers. So needless to say, we had a lot of good conversation. That's preachers, including Joe. Here's the Sea of Galilee. We were in the city of Tiberias, which is located right here. We were looking across this way. That is about 6 miles from where our hotel room is across the Sea of Galilee. And as you can see, it's dusk as the sun is coming up in the morning. You can see pretty good across there. Sea of Galilee at its widest point is 7 miles. It's not a problem looking across. The length of the Sea of Galilee is 14 miles. That, you know, we always think of it as, or I have, I'll put it that way, big body of water. It's not that big. From our hotel balcony, I can look that away and see that end of the Sea of Galilee. I can look that away, see the other end of the Sea of Galilee. So when we see and hear about they're out on the Sea of Galilee, it's not that big a body of water. It's just not that big. Okay. Another thing. Here is Nazareth. From Nazareth down to the Sea of Galilee is about 12 or 13 miles. So when you hear about them traveling around the area, that's one of the things that really got us about this area. When we think of traveling and going somewhere, or you read in the scriptures that they were at this location and they traveled to another location, well, so many times we put it in things that you and I would look at. That area is very condensed. Where it says they are here and they went to there, it may be 2 miles down the road. Okay. Think of it this way in many places. We have Asheville. They left Asheville. They went to Fairview. You go, well, that's not far. That's just right here. Yeah. Okay, or they were in Asheville. They went down to Arden. Or they're in Asheville. They went up to Woodford, Weaverville. They're in Asheville. They came over to Swannanoa. They're in Asheville. They came to Oakley. Okay, not far. 2, 3, 4 miles. A great distance for their traveling was 10 miles, 12 miles, 15 miles. Okay. The longest distance that you see them traveling, is from the Sea of Galilee here down to Jerusalem. And that's a distance of 120 miles. And that's about the longest distance you see them in one location. And we know that Christ and the disciples went up to Jerusalem several times. So when they did, that's a 240-mile round trip. And they're walking. And you'll see in a minute the kind of territory that they travel through. One of the things that we read about in the scriptures is the first miracle that Christ did. And we ask anyone, they'll say, oh, well, that was when he was at the wedding feast and he turned the water to wine. Well, here's Nazareth. Here's Cana of Galilee, right there where this took place. We were in Nazareth, heading down toward the Sea of Galilee, and I was looking out the window of the coach, the bus, whatever, and there was a sign that says, you're entering Cana of Galilee, or you're entering Cana, and you're going, wait a minute, I thought I was still in Nazareth. Okay, now it's all together. So when we see he traveled from Nazareth to Cana, he went from Biltmore Forest to Oakley. It was just down the road. It wasn't a big journey. It was, you know, maybe a mile at the most that they went. And when Christ and the disciples, along with his mother and brethren, members of the family, left the wedding feast there in Cana, they traveled down to Capernaum, which is right here. Okay. So they went about 12 miles down toward the Sea of Galilee, and then it's about 5 or 6 miles around to where Capernaum is located. Now, here's one of the things that you look at in the scripture. This is recorded in John. This is one of the places in our current reading. He says they were in Cana and they went down to Capernaum. Well, up here, you're at an elevation of 1,400 feet above sea level. When you get to Capernaum in the Sea of Galilee, you're 700 feet below sea level. About a 2,100 foot elevation drop. So when the scriptures are saying he was in one location and he went down to another location, it's telling you something. He didn't, it's not like us going, oh, I'm here in Asheville and I'm going to go down to Hendersonville. We're talking about we're going down the road. Or I'm here and I'm going up to Weaverville. Well, we're just talking about, we're going up the road. The scriptures are very exact. And that's one of the things you get when you're traveling through this region. When it says he is one there in one location and they go down, they're actually going down. They're changing elevations. In the same scripture area there in 2 John, it talks about when Christ again and the disciples, they were down in Capernaum, they stayed there a few days, and then they left because it was time of the feast, Passover. And they went up to Jerusalem. Well, that means they traveled from here, Capernaum, elevation of 700 feet below sea level. They took the Roman road that goes right along by the River Jordan, all the way down to Jericho. Jericho, by the way, is 825 feet below sea level. You go, it's going down? Yes, because all this goes down to right along here, which is the very top part of the Dead Sea. which is 1,407 feet below sea level. So they're traveling down. But when it says they went from Capernaum up to Jerusalem, Jerusalem is setting at an elevation of about 2,400 to 2,500 feet above sea level. So they traveled down to Jericho, 825 feet below sea level, and then they've got about an 18-mile journey going from Jericho on the Roman road up through the mountains up to Jerusalem. So when you're reading the scriptures and it tells you they're traveling down to here or up to there, look at it literally, because that's what they're doing. Okay. Well, by the way, if any questions or you have comments or anything coming up during this, don't hesitate to get my attention, speak up, do whatever. Okay. Guess you got to hold your tongue right to make it work. We went out on the boat on the Sea of Galilee, and this is just looking at the shoreline. You'll have places along the shore where it's flat for just a few hundred yards, and then it starts rising up. This probably goes up to an elevation of 1,100 to 1,200 feet over here. Just almost a sheer cliff. It rises very quickly. You'll have other places where it'll go up at a more gentle slope, shall we say. But if you notice the land, it's brown, it's dry, it's barren. When we were there, this is in the middle of October, most of the days up in this area was in the mid-90s. It's humid, it's hot, it's dry. You drink a lot of water. Again, we're out on the Sea of Galilee in a boat looking out. This is one of the cities around there, just to give you an idea of how things are. If you notice, a little village down here by the water, you've got a city here. You see parts of another one back over here. That's a totally different town. It's not part of this one. Totally different little town back over there. We were up on one of the slopes on the opposite side of where we were staying from the Sea of Galilee, looking back across, and you could easily count 8, 9, 10 little villages around through there, and they were 12, 10, 12, 15 miles across over to them. So visibility for those who've traveled out west is very much like that. You can see a long way. Again, out on the Sea of Galilee, looking back, if you'll notice, this area, the land slopes a lot more gently going up to here. And over here, you're probably, again, at 700-800 feet elevation above sea level. This is as we traveled inland a little bit, just to give you an idea of distances. You can see some of the fields. All the fields where they grow things and everything is all through irrigation. The northern area up here by the Sea of Galilee gets the most rain. The southern part of Israel gets very little rain. It's very arid, very dry. But if you'll notice back in the background, you'll see little towns here. There's a distance, there's another little village here, another one up over here, separate little one over here. So again, if it says Christ was over here and is traveling over to there, it's no big deal, you can see him. It may be 3, 4 miles over there, but again, not that far. This, just to give you an idea of some of the things. This was a citrus grove that we saw, irrigation running in here. They had citrus trees growing. If you notice, all around where it's not irrigated, scrub, dry. And that's the way the country is. All of this is rocky ground. Rick, I've thought of you multiple times because you've talked about on the parable of sowing the seed on the ground and the rocky ground and the hard ground. The ground over here is all of it, very rocky. If you notice, there are little paths and things going all through here. And this is how people are traveling from, you know, if they're not out driving somewhere and they're walking from one little area to another, you've got dirt paths just traveling all over these regions around through here. And of course, that's how Christ and his disciples and people back then, as they move from one little village to the other, they're traveling on these little dirt roads. Give you an idea of just some of the elevation changes as you're standing. We were parked in this area. You can look up. You'll notice the effect of the land here. When Christ talked about coming out of Capernaum in Matthew chapter 5, and he says he went up on the mountain and sat, and the multitude followed him out. And then he began the Sermon on the Mount. Well, I thought about that list this morning when you showed that picture. The picture is very good. However, it's wrong because it showed the people surrounding Christ. And that's not the way it was done. This is not the location. I'll have a picture in just a minute to give you an idea of the location. But you can kind of see how the land lays in places. You'll see this. It's kind of a bowl effect. It's almost like a natural amphitheater. They have run tests, particularly in the area of where they believe, right up the mountain from Capernaum, where the Sermon on the Mount was given, up in that area somewhere. And a person could stand there, sit there, as Christ did, and speak in his normal voice. And the people could be up on the mountain and hear him. I know you've all seen pictures of the Greek and the Roman amphitheaters where people are up, you know, you've got the theater built. And you can stand there and there, and they can hear you. Well, there are natural places like that in this area. So it was very easy for Christ to talk to thousands of people as he did, and they could hear him. Again, just to give you an idea of what the country looks like. When you're traveling through there, it's hot, it's dusty. It's barren, unless you're in the area where they're growing crops and irrigating. This is what it looks like. You can see the mountains back here, the little gullies and things running up through there. Now, we're up in an area in which we can kind of look down on some of the valleys, and you see, again, all the little towns, these little villages, back over here, back in there, back over here. And this is an area in which they're growing crops, and they run irrigation lines in through there. So you've got good fertile land as long as you got water. And that's the big thing over there. You need the water. You know how many times in you're reading scriptures and they're talking about water. It's a big subject over there, big subject. Again, just a little close up to give you an idea. You can see this was part of the Sea of Galilee back over here. Here was a town, there was another little area, here was a little village over here. And again, we've got areas where they're growing different crops. They grow a lot of fruit, nuts, olive trees, of course.
Here.
Yes.
Do they irrigate water from the Sea of Galilee?
Yes, they'll from the Sea of Galilee and from some of the tributaries that go into the Sea of Galilee, they'll do that. I had a photo from the area down to the Sea of Galilee, and this is the area where the Sermon on the Mount takes place, of course. Now, they can't, you can't go, this is the place in a lot of places, but you know the area that it took place in. And this is the area where they believe the Sermon on the Mount took place, just right up the mountainside. You can see how elevation down here, the Sea of Galilee, okay. And we're up above that. The town of Capernaum is just located right down over here. Yo. Yeah, the Sea of Galilee is a freshwater lake. It's fed by streams and things that are up in the mountains just north of the Sea of Galilee. Okay, this going into the town of Capernaum, and then that's the Sea of Galilee there at Capernaum. And of course, we went down to it there because we went from the area where the Sermon on the Mount supposedly was given, and you can walk down to this. We actually drove down. It's only about half a mile from where the site is. But when you're reading the scriptures, in Matthew chapter 5, at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, like I said, it says that Christ went up the mountain and sat, and the multitude followed. Chapter 8 of Matthew, it's after he gives the sermon, it says he goes down to Capernaum. Okay. Again, it's telling you, he went up the mountain, he's going down to Capernaum. He went back down the mountain. So, if you would, turn to Matthew chapter 16. This is the time when Christ and the disciples had been traveling a little north of the Sea of Galilee, and they're now up into Caesarea Philippi. Caesarea Philippi is, I'd love to get back there, if this will move fast enough. The map that I had to show there doesn't come. Okay, here's again northern part of the Sea of Galilee. Here's Capernaum. Okay, and here is Caesarea Philippi. Christ and the disciples had traveled from this area of Galilee over to Tyre. They've gone up to Sidon, which is just north of Tyre up here, and now they have come back down toward Caesarea Philippi. They're coming back down this way to come back down to Capernaum. Okay. There's a road that comes across the mountains here. Mount Hermon is located just right there. Okay, it's a 9,000 foot mountain. Okay. And to go from Syria and that area of the world to come down to Egypt, people would travel on the road through the mountains next to Caesarea Philippi and then on down. It's kind of like going from Knoxville to Asheville and going through the mountains on I-40. You're not driving along the top of the mountains. You're driving along through the valleys. And that's the way their roads are over there, of course. So Christ and his disciples are up here, and they're following the road, and they're coming down, and they make a stop here at Caesarea Philippi. They're about 20 miles north of the Sea of Galilee. Like I said, you're hot, you're thirsty, and you want to refresh yourself. And this is in the ruins there at Caesarea Philippi. These are a mountain stream that's coming down through here. It goes on down and empties into the Sea of Galilee. Okay. But these are two pools, ancient pools here. You can see the rocks coming across, and same there. And what people would do as they came across here, they would stop, wash themselves off, refresh themselves. You know, they're hot, they're dirty, they've been traveling. So they want to stop and refresh themselves. This is one of the places they would do it. Now, let's take a look at the scripture reading here. Matthew 16, this is Caesarea Philippi. And when Jesus came into the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, "Who do men say that I, the Son of Man, am?" And so they said, some said John the Baptist, some Elijah, others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. And he said to them, "Well, who do you say that I am?" And Simon Peter answered and said, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus answered and said unto him, "Blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. And whatever you loose on earth will be loose in heaven." Okay. That took place Caesarea Philippi. The disciples and Christ had been traveling. They may have stopped here at these pools, washed themselves off just to refresh themselves. But right back here, as you can see, people are walking. There is the path that continues. Now, I don't know if you can notice all these trees, but right up here you see the top of a rock mountain. Okay, we'll get a close look of that, hopefully. There we go. And this is what's back there. When you go through those trees, and you go up part of the way on the mountain, this is what was located back there during the time of Christ. Caesarea Philippi was a center of idol worship, a large center of idol worship. That was about where those trees were that we saw going up to this sheer rock mountain back here. Christ and the apostles would have come up the path to this area. Over here was the temple of Pan. Pan was a god that was half man, half goat. And they worshiped the idol god Pan. And this was his temple. This was a temple to the emperor Augustus that was built during his time. And so this was the temple that was used for emperor worship. And then they had other temples to gods here and here and back over here. And if you'll notice, if you can look close, you'll see here's a niche that's cut into the rock wall. And right above it there's another niche, and another one. And then over here on this side, there's another niche, there's another one. And they had more gods into those niches. And that's what they look like. That is those niches that were showed there. And they had gods, their idols, set up in these. So, they've traveled. Christ is probably standing somewhere down in this area. Then, you know, this is one of those areas where we can go, this is probably where this, where they were. We know they were up in the general area. It says they were in Caesarea Philippi. Okay. So they were probably up here in this area. And what brought about this conversation? What did Christ start off with? Hey, who do men say that I am? What are they surrounded by? Idols, temples of idol worship. He's having a conversation with his disciples. Okay, who do men say that I am? Well, some say, you know, John the Baptist, Elijah, Jeremiah. And then he turns to him and he says, who do you say that I am? And what does Peter reply? You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. What are they surrounded by?
Dead gods.
Dead gods. Why didn't Peter just say, you're the Christ, the Son of God? No. You're the Christ, the Son of the living God. They're surrounded by dead gods. Okay? What was Christ's reply when he said that? He said, blessed are you, Simon Barjona, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, and on what? And on this rock I will build my church. What rock? The statement that Peter made, the solid statement of Peter, that you're Christ, the Son of the living God. That's the rock I'm going to build my church. Not this rock. This rock with these niches, with these false gods. The ruins of the temple, well, up there. You can see, okay? You see why the conversation makes sense? You can read the passage and understand the passage, but when you're standing there in the courtyard of these ruins, and we were as a group there, and you read this passage, you go, okay, I understand why Christ asked his disciples the question, who do men say that I am? Who do you say that I am? And why he replied in the way he did when Peter answered him. This is some of the things that you get out of a trip like this, that you just go, oh, okay. Now I understand. Shall we say, more completely of this particular event. It makes sense when you're seeing where you are, what you're surrounded by, and what will bring about that particular conversation. Olive trees. Olive trees. We have now moved from the area of the Galilee, and we're down in Jerusalem. And this is taken up on the Mount of Olives. Still got olive trees. This is looking from the upper part of the Mount of Olives back toward Jerusalem. You can see the gold dome there. Of course, that's the Dome of the Rock, where the big Muslim mosque is, but it's setting on the foundation of where the temple was during the time of Christ, the second temple. All of this that you see back in here is modern day Jerusalem. It wouldn't have been there during the time of Christ. That would have been just open land. Same type of land we've looked at. And as you can see from looking at the ground around here on the olive trees, you don't have to have nice, beautiful, fertile property. It grows on rocky soil just fine. This is moving down a little bit from where we were, just walking down the mountain. Gives you a little better view. Like I said, this again is where the temple was located. This is the wall that's built around the temple. This is where the gates are. There would have been roads out here that people would have traveled in to go in through these gates and go into the temple area. This right here below us where the vegetation is, and you can see they've got a church type building built in here also. This is the Garden of Gethsemane. The Garden of Gethsemane is about a third of the way up the mountain on the Mount of Olives. We know a lot of times when Christ was teaching over here in the area of the temple that to get away from the crowds after he'd been teaching over there, he said he would go out to the Garden of Gethsemane. So he would leave over there, come out the gate. I'll show you in a minute, it's a slope coming down, going across this area, and coming up over to the Garden of Gethsemane just to kind of get away. It was a quiet place, a place of refuge for him, and that's what he used it for. This is standing in the Garden of Gethsemane, about the area where Christ would have been on the night that he was betrayed. Can't say it's the exact location, but it's right there in that area. You look across and you can, again, see the main part of the city of Jerusalem during that time was right in through here and then back over this direction. That is looking at those city gates. Of course, they're blocked up now. When they rebuilt the wall, they blocked them in. Okay. But you can see you got a nice slope coming down here, so it's up. Just to give you an idea, this is the what you see in the news all the time, the Western Wailing Wall. The area we were looking at before is on the east side of the temple. Now I'm over on the west side. This is looking at the Wailing Wall. And the purpose here was just to give you an idea of how high this is. You can see some people right here in their heads and up. The wall in places, okay, here again, people standing here, the wall, top of the wall is right up here. The wall in places ran from 100 to 150 feet up. Okay. What I'd like to do in the few minutes we have remaining is I want you to do something for me. We're going to quickly go through each of the Gospels and take a look at what they say about the night that Christ was betrayed. We know he was in the upper room. He left the upper room. He came over here to the Garden of Gethsemane. Okay. I want, as we go through this, I want you to put yourself in this location and put yourself where Christ was. And let's take a look at the events. Matthew records, "Then Jesus came with them to a place called Gethsemane and said to the disciples, 'Sit here while I go and pray over there.'" We know that happened. Okay. Skip down a few verses, beginning in verse 45 of Matthew 26. "And then he came to the disciples and said to them, 'Are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise up, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand.' And while he was still speaking, behold, Judas, one of the 12, with a great multitude with swords and clubs, came from the chief priests and the elders of the people." Matthew's account. Look at Mark. Mark, beginning in chapter 14, verse 26 to begin with. "And when they had sung a song, they went out to the Mount of Olives." Beginning in verse 32, "And they came to a place that was named Gethsemane, and he said to the disciples, 'Sit here while I pray.'" Down a few verses, verse 41. "And he came the third time and said to them, 'Are you still sleeping and resting? It is enough. The hour has come. Behold, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. See, my betrayer is at hand.' And immediately, while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, with a great multitude, with swords and clubs, came from the chief priests and scribes and the elders." Luke, chapter 22, beginning in verse 39. "Coming out, he went to the Mount of Olives, and he was accompanied, and his disciples also followed him." Verse 41, "And he was withdrawn from them about a stone's throw, and he knelt down and prayed, saying, 'Father, if it is your will, take this cup away from me. Nevertheless, my will, not my will, but yours be done.' Then an angel appeared unto him from heaven, strengthening him. And being in agony, he prayed more earnestly. Then his sweat became like great drops of blood falling down to the ground." And it said, "Then he rose up from prayer and had come to his disciples, and he found them sleeping from sorrow. And he said to them, 'Why do you sleep? Arise and pray, lest you enter into temptation.' And while he was still speaking, behold, a multitude, and he who was called Judas, one of the 12, went before them and drew nigh to Jesus to kiss him." John's version, John chapter 13. They were in their upper room. And in verse 30, after Judas had received the piece of bread, he then went out immediately, and it was night. Chapter 18 of John. "And when Jesus had spoken these words, he went out with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where there was a garden, where he and his disciples entered. And Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. Then Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and the Pharisees, came there with lanterns and torches and weapons. Jesus, therefore, knowing all these things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, 'Whom are you seeking?' And they said, 'Jesus of Nazareth.' And he said, 'I am he.'" All these recorded in the scriptures, took place right here. Here's the question. What is not told us in the scriptures that you get from being here? It says, it was dark. There were a bunch of people coming after him. There was troops. There was officers. There were representatives from the court, and the Pharisees and the Sadducees. They were coming with torches, lanterns, weapons, clubs. And each time when you read this, he goes back to address his disciples who've been sleeping again for the third time. And each one of them says, almost, and immediately this procession was there. Or they came up on him as he was speaking to the disciples there. What do you not get? Take a look. Here's the temple. The procession leaves the temple. They come out this gate. This is the Kidron Valley. They come out those gates that we looked at a little closer. They come down the mountain, this side, down this slope. They come across the valley. They cross the Kidron Creek. They come on across the valley. They come up over here. It will take them somewhere, we've estimated, because we walked that area, a group of people, somewhere in the neighborhood of probably 30 minutes, give or take, maybe a little less, maybe a little more, but at least a good 30 minutes for them to come from that gate over to where Jesus is. Can you see it? So could he. That's what the scriptures don't tell you. Jesus here in the garden, he can see him coming. They didn't sneak up on him. He didn't all of a sudden appear immediately. They were there. They were there immediately after he got through talking to his disciples. But he could see them coming the whole way. When they came out of those gates, it's night. They're carrying lanterns. They're carrying torches. It is very visible. Okay? This is a place, it's dark. It's quiet. You got a whole group of people coming. They're making noise. They're not sneaking up on you. They're coming across to arrest him. They take him in. To torture him, crucify him. We know that. He knew that. We know he was in agony because he knew what was coming. He's here on the Mountain of Olives, located directly behind the Mount of Olives. There's a road that leads to Bethany. Bethany's about 3 miles directly behind Christ. 3-4 miles back down the road. Bethany was the town where he would come up and spend time. The home of Mary, Martha, Lazarus. It's spoken several times in the scriptures where he would go out and leave Jerusalem and go out to Bethany. Just a few miles behind him. He could see him coming, people. If he wanted, all he had to do was turn around, go up over the mountain. It's just a few hundred yards up the hill. Hit the road. Go to Bethany. From Bethany, you're on the main Roman road that goes right down to Jericho. You hit the main road that goes straight north and goes right back up to Galilee. He could have left. We all know that. You traveled across here multiple times. But that night, he knew what was coming. He stayed there. But they didn't sneak on him. He saw him coming at least 30 minutes before they got there. The scriptures don't tell us that. We know he was in agony. Can you imagine the agony that he was going through that night, where even God sent an angel to comfort him? And the whole time that he's up there, knowing what's coming ahead, and he can look across and he can see them coming for him. That's what you get from being there. That's not recorded. That's one of those, oh my goodness, I never thought about it. It just never entered my mind that he could actually see them coming. But he could. You'll get a lot more of this from Joe. He took a lot more pictures and information than I did, of course. I just hope I've been able, maybe tonight, to convey a little bit of what it was like to be in, particularly, Caesarea Philippi and here in the Garden of Gethsemane. And you look and you see some of the things that by being there or seeing the pictures from there gives you a more complete understanding of why certain conversations took place the way they did. And certain events, particularly like this, that are not recorded, that when you're there and you look out, and it's just one of those times when you go, oh, why didn't I know that before? Any questions? Anything? If not, thank you for your time.